Welcome to the H2O World Podcast.
A podcast for anyone who loves life on the water.
He is Sir Robin Knox Johnston, the first person to sail non-stop around the world solo.
And she's Shelley Jory Lee, British powerboat champion and world record holder and businesswoman.
This is the H2O World Podcast.
Swapping emails with you, Shelley, you seem to be spending quite a lot of time in the United States.
I have been in the United States, Robin. Yes, I've not stopped powerboat racing. I've changed seats and jobs and hats, as if you might well. I've got out of my racing seat and I've now been managing for the last few years. So I've been managing teams all over the world, which has actually been amazing. I've been looking after 8 Class 1 teams, which is the sort of elite of our sport. And I've been looking after them in America, which has been challenging, to say the least, but I've absolutely loved it. I've learned so much about the other side of my sport, which is, I think everyone should realise what goes on behind the scenes. It's all very well us jumping in our boats and racing, but they don't realise the infrastructure and the safety and the just the hours of to get things ready behind the scenes. And I've also been very lucky to be running an XCAT team, Team GB, for the XCAT World Championships, which has been amazing. And we won the world title last year, which I saw that. Yeah, actually got a world title at last, albeit I was the team manager, not quite sat in the boat. But I'm going to take a little bit of that glory. Absolutely loved that. Did really well last year, won the World Championships in XCAT, went out for the first race this season, turned it upside down.
Oh, Shelley, not again.
I know. I was the team manager, so I was on the dry bit. It wasn't entirely my fault, but we're a team and we all work together. But yes, we were fighting for pole position. We were literally, I think, 1/10 of a second off of pole position place on the grid. And just, we were unlucky, Robin. We were pushing and the wind changed. We were in Fujairah, which is just next to Dubai, for anybody who doesn't know. We were really, really pushing. Wind changed and a gust just came straight up the tunnel and that was it. We were gone over backwards. But turned everything round, managed to actually rent a boat from the Dubai team. Very, very lovely of them to let us rent it, and we're back out racing within 24 hours. So team worked brilliantly, got back out, got back on the water and got some valuable points for the start of the season.
You see, I find it fascinating you've moved into management because, you know, I've been managing races for years and years now. And it is a different side, and you begin to realise, oh, wait a minute, now I understand what that race committee were up to, which I didn't fully understand before. They were just a nuisance, frankly, getting in the way of my sailing.
Do you prefer the management side, or do you look at it and think, gosh, this is a whole load of grief, I wish I was out there sailing?
You know, I don't mind it. I think it's quite fun to be able to say I can modify rules, because I think this would be a better way of doing things. I've got a very good team working with me I can exchange ideas with. Mm. And that always helps. So I don't really mind. But there's nothing really to beat that last 10 seconds before a race start, just getting up to the line and hoping you've got the wind right and you're taking advantage of someone else. Now that's when the adrenaline runs.
Yeah, I can totally appreciate where you're coming from, because it's like a start line for me. Yellow flag, green flag, and it's just amazing. And then for me, it's crossing that finish line as well, that the buzz, even when you're not on the podium or winning, the buzz of just finishing and thinking, oh, I've done that.
Well, that's right, you cross the finish line, you hope you hear a gun go off to say that you've won. It happens occasionally, but not always, obviously, but that's what you're doing it for. And of course, sailing is, because it's so dependent on nature, you can never say, it's rare that someone will win every race. And therefore it comes down to an average. That's why the Olympics are a number of races, because it's the best way of deciding who the top person is.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk more about what our loves are and how we have come to be where we are today, Robin, and in our amazing careers in sailing and powerboat racing. But tell me where you've actually been for the last few years. Apart from I have dinner with you every 6 months and have a small catch-up. Let your listeners know what you've been up to.
Well, I sold my racing boat, my Open 60, because I wasn't using it enough. And I bought myself second-hand a lovely cruiser. And so the first thing I did is went up to Greenland and took some friends and got as far north as Scoresby Sound, went into the Arctic Circle. You wouldn't have been able to do that 30 years ago. The ice is nothing like as thick as it used to be.
Really? That's not good news.
It's not good news. It's very worrying, in fact. But it was beautiful up there. That's the longest fjord in the world. And we're motoring quietly. There's no wind in the fjord. We're motoring quietly for 80 kilometres to get to the top of it. And all you've got is the occasional iceberg. There's no flat ice of any sort at all. And that was a fabulous trip to and from Iceland, where they were very friendly, I have to say. And so that was one summer. Another summer I went up and cruised around the west coast of Scotland. Now that was interesting because when I lived up there about 40 years ago, we'd be the only boat in an anchorage. Now there's six or seven in each anchorage.
Really?
So sailing has really taken off. People have discovered that west coast and are using it. But there's still so much space. It's not crowded like, say, Newtown Creek is in the Solent, where sometimes you don't even need to anchor. There's so many boats there, you can hardly move.
You say you sold your racing boat and you've bought a cruiser. Does that mean we're never going to see you do a race again?
Oh, you never know. I might just potter somewhere sometime. I think racing's been such fun, particularly the sort of racing I like doing, which is single-handed and transatlantic or something like that. You know, oceanic racing is more my style.
Would you do a single-handed race now? It's 10 years since you did, really, your last big race was the Route de Rhum, right?
Yeah, I hadn't realised it was 10 years ago. Yes, it seems like yesterday. Time is flying. That's such a good race. So it's organised from St Malo to Guadeloupe, and it's in the autumn, so you're getting away from the northern winter and going to the nice sunny climes. But it's very well organised. It's a good race to be in. The atmosphere's great. And I just enjoyed meeting up with old friends, people I used to race against, all coming down to see me off and say hi and catch up with them. It was just nice to be there.
Yeah, it's... Now, how can I say this and not sound rude, Robin? But then I'm usually rude to you anyway, so do we really care? Sailing, to me, there's no age limit. It doesn't matter how old you are. Once you can sail, you can just go on and on and on and until the end.
Last winter, I decided it was time to get warm for Christmas.
Get warm?
Yes, warm.
Warm?
Yes.
Right, OK. So you jetted off somewhere?
No, I sailed over to the Caribbean.
Oh, tra-la-la.
But on the way, we ran into a lot of bad weather in November. And we dived into Brest for shelter to avoid one storm. Set off across the Bay of Biscay, got another storm, so we went into Corana. Set off then to go to the Madeira and got attacked by orcas who damaged the rudder and the steering. So we had to go into Vigo and get that repaired.
Oh my goodness!
So, well, there's been a lot of attacks by orcas recently. It's over 200. I think three boats have been sunk by attacks. No one's been killed yet.
Why are the orcas suddenly attacking the boats? Why has this suddenly become a problem? There's more of them, or they're fearing? What's happened?
We don't know for sure. It looks like it's one particular group who are doing all the damage, about nine of them. It may be that the big one, which I'm told is female, and she was big, 16 feet long, was damaged by a fishing boat and is taking it out.
So we've got pirate orcas.
Yes. Well, the big one didn't attack. It was the medium ones that attacked. But the little ones are watching. They're learning. But they just come in, taking it in turns to just bash the rudder. And eventually a connecting rod broke. And, you know, you couldn't touch the wheel. You'd have broken your wrist. You had to just leave it and let them get on with it. What else do you do? You need an anti-tank missile to kill them.
It must have been quite frightening.
And we're not allowed to kill them anyway. So, yes, it was frightening. I mean, I felt the boat was strong enough. I was just annoyed, you know, why are you picking on me? Why are you picking on any of us? Mm. We don't mean any harm to orcas.
No.
Why are you attacking yachts? But it's over 200 attacks now.
So how long did that whole trip actually take then? Because it sounds like you've had quite a few delays on it.
Well, we did. We got to Barbados eventually, just before Christmas. We made it there. We dropped into Madeira and then across the Atlantic to Barbados. And then we went to St Vincent. And we spent Christmas there in a lovely little bay, no one else in it. And we just anchored in the middle and we could swim ashore. It was lovely. And then from there we went down to Grenada, Carriacou, I wouldn't go to Carrico again. The authorities are extremely rude.
Oh, really?
Yeah, unnecessary. I mean, it's, you go in to report. You have to report in and pay every time you go in and out of a port. But, you know, I went in to report, say, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You wait outside till I call you. And I thought, oh, all right, I'll wait. Nothing else was going on. No one went to the office. 40 minutes later, said, oh, you come now. And very abrupt. And I thought, you're not very welcoming.
No.
And why? You know, your country depends on this waterborne tourism.
Yes.
So I'm not sure I'd go to Carrico again. I thought, I don't have to come here to have people being rude to me.
It's a shame because a lot of the Caribbean islands are so welcoming.
Yes.
To the tourists, the cruise ships, the sort of sailing boats. And so how many people were with you on that crew?
Well, for over Christmas, I think we were 12. People sleeping on deck, obviously. Most of the trip, we were 6 or 7. And but coming back to your point there about their welcoming, I've got friends in Grenada, Grenadans. Couldn't meet nicer people. And there's company I enjoy, I respect them. One runs a very good boatyard, which he set up himself and developed. And he's become a really good friend over the years. I've been there about 3 or 4 times. But you just think, I've got to go through these rude officials to go and see him. Why are they so rude?
Is it some sort of power authority thing? You know, it's a bit like the high-vis thing. I'm important, so I'm going to throw my authority around here.
I think it has to be, yeah. I think they've got a uniform and a job and probably not a very interesting job. And that's their way of sort of making it interesting.
Yeah, it is a real shame. So that boat that you took to the Caribbean for Christmas, that's your cruiser boat, the same boat that you took to Scotland and all around. Wow, so you're basically getting around the world on that. And what size is that boat?
Well, she's 56 feet. We sailed her back March via Bermuda, which was very welcoming, very friendly. And then non-stop to Horta, and then Horta home, with about 6 of us on board.
And is she generally kept here in the South Coast? If you're not sort of going to the Caribbean and Scotland, etc., you basically sail her locally?
Yeah, all the time. I was out weekend before last. I was out sailing her when we had those big heavy storms. Broke the forestay, but never mind.
I was going to say, just recently, Robin, it seems to have been blown a hooly for the last 2-3 weeks, and not many people were on the water.
No, there weren't that many yachts out, actually. I was very pleased to see about 4 boats, all the same class, racing, well reefed down, and a few other cruising yachts, but there weren't a lot of us out that weekend.
No, I know on Saturday one of our powerboats was out testing because the season starts in about a month or so now. And they were out testing and they said they had like sort of 2-metre swells out there and were sort of jumping across them and thought, I think we should go in now before we break the boat before the season starts.
I share their view about the weather.
The other big thing in your life is Clipper.
Well, we're in the middle of our 13th round the world yacht race. We've been doing it for 27 years. The thing I love about that is 40% of those crews have never been on a boat before. They're the easiest to train because they've no bad habits.
Yeah, and they listen.
And they do listen. And just about 30% are ladies. In fact, in this race, 25% of my skippers and mates are female. And that's numbers quietly growing.
Good, good.
And I think I was talking to someone the other day about this, you know, they're saying, well, there aren't enough women. I said, it's going to take time. Well, women get into the sport and then get experienced enough to get to these sort of positions. There are some specials, you know, like Ellen MacArthur, for instance, or Dee Kafari. You'd say, well, they've shown their capabilities. But I think the numbers are growing slowly, and I think the sport's benefiting from it.
Good, good. Well, I definitely want to, over the next few months of our new podcast, definitely talk about that and take that a little bit further and look into the opportunities for women that are in our marine world, which are not being taken up as much as they should, to be honest. So I definitely want to go forward on that.
Well, I mean, in sailing, we are seeing more women taking the sport up, which I think has been a great benefit, actually. But what's it like in powerboating?
It's not great, if I'm truly honest. We've got some coming through on the racing side, who actually want to get in the boats and either navigate or drive, etc. But not as many as I'd like. I think the women are great at it because when they come in, exactly what you just sort of said, they're new, they want to learn, they listen, and they pick up things very fast. And I can always remember my powerboat teacher, Neil Holmes, when he used to take me out for race training. He would train me, and then he would go and train like another 10 men for the rest of the day. And he always said that myself and Libby, my female co-driver, we listened and absorbed so much more than the men. We actually took in and put into practice, where sometimes the men have a little bit of red mist come down and, you know, just gung-ho at it. But what I want to see is more women in the working side of it all, that the organisation, that the governing bodies, we have very, very little women, officer of the days, scrutineers, it's probably not even 1%, Robin. And that is what I would like to see. I would like to get more women in the UIM, which is our huge governing body, and really change that a bit. And I'd like to get more women actually out on the water driving. Because let's face it, in the motor cruise world, not the sailing world, I agree, but in the motor cruise world, it's 9 out of 10 times husband, father behind the wheel, and the lady has got the gloves on doing the ropes and fenders.
Yes, I'm afraid that is very, very true. We see it the whole time. But I do believe there is a change coming.
Good.
And it's going to take time, but I think it'll accelerate. As more ladies join the sport, they'll start having a greater influence. We are going to start seeing them, more and more of them, on committees, I think. I think that'll be beneficial.
And in the commercial world as well?
It'll come, won't it? I mean, you know, once you've got ladies who've done an apprenticeship in boat building or something, and we have them, they'll move on up.
Yeah, and we've got some female engineers as well coming through. I've seen that in like sort of Pasco Internationals, Falcon Tenders. They've all got female engineers coming through, actually building and building the engines and working on the boats, which I think is fabulous to see.
Yes, it is. It'll happen, but it'll take time. We'd all like to see it happen more quickly. But, I mean, Shelley, while I've been sort of playing with my boat, and of course, if you own a boat, I think it's a good thing it's my only vice, because I couldn't afford another one. But you've been spending even more money, haven't you? What are you up to on land?
I know, I've got my beautiful Sunseeker pleasure boat, Robin, but yes, we've just spent all our money on building a house. Yes, I have actually been building a house, so I've been very land orientated. Had some amazing builders. We literally in 8 months went from a field to moving in. And yeah, Trevor, my husband, and I have just built a lovely new house, which I'm very excited about. And I think we should do one of our shows from my new kitchen, which is huge.
Every kitchen should be huge. You know, there's nothing to beat a good farmhouse kitchen.
I didn't want a kitchen, Robin. I don't know. I don't go in the kitchen. That's Trevor's department.
That's not true. When you sailed from London back down to the Solent with me, I saw you in the galley.
That was only because I was forced to make the tea, because I was rubbish at anything else.
Okay, but we've got to start you somewhere.
This is true.
Thank you for downloading this edition of the H2O World podcast. Subscribe on your podcast platform of choice and you'll never miss an episode. And if there's something we should know about, email us. h2oworldpodcast@gmail.com.
The H2O World Podcast.